Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome back to the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. This is Buck rolling solo today here in the chair, talking to all of you across the country. Thank you so much for being here with me. We are an open line Friday, 800-282-2882. We miss our buddy Clay, my main man. He's out today on vacation, well deserved. Left me in charge, threw me the keys to the Maserati, so to speak, and is letting me drive it solo today. And so we want to hear from all of you, 800-282-2882. Coming up, we'll talk about the California recall situation, some words of wisdom from Larry Elder on that one, who is making Gavin Newsom sweat more than usual about the possibility of losing his job. Updates on the climate change insanity from some of the libs in the media. And of course, we have time, a little more of the Fauciite madness getting debunked, and then your calls. But I want to tell you about this story. Trapped in Afghanistan, rescued by volunteers, how a handful of Americans freed 5,000 Afghans. From a lounge at the Willard Hotel in Washington, a group of men and women mobilized a global network to conduct a two-week military-style rescue operation, which is known as the Commercial Task Force. We have Zach Van Meter with us right now, who is a member of that Commercial Task Force and was heavily involved in coordinating this. He dispatched former commandos to Kabul on this two-week operation. Zach, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Just how did this all come together? I mean, give folks a sense of who you are and what the genesis of the task force was.
So I have no military background or intel or anything, just in private equity. We looked at defense manufacturing, and in that business, you got to kind of hire the guys who used to work in that space. So back up a couple years ago, we met this gentleman named Sean, who's heavily featured in the article. Sean called me one day and said, hey, you want to save 3,500 orphans? So, of course, I said yes. Then he told me it was Afghanistan, so I got a big lump in my throat and said, okay. You know, following the news as well. And then it kind of unfolded from there. So we needed a place to put them. So we called the UAE, and they said they would take them graciously. And then Sean and a team went over to first Abu Dhabi and then to Kabul. And then we set up like a joint center in D.C. to coordinate everything from people trying to get their family members rescued to former soft guys trying to get their terps out to, you know, people just trying to help American citizens. And it just evolved. You had a mix of guys from two-star retired general Jim Linder in there to people that worked at Goldman Sachs to ex-military, former state people. We had the embassy of Afghanistan in there as well. And it was, you know, an incredible display of, you know, American pride and patriotism and everybody giving a part of their soul to try to help, you know, help and save these heroes.
We're speaking to Zach Van Meter. He's a volunteer for the Commercial Task Force, which was responsible for getting thousands of people evacuated out of Afghanistan. Zach, can you just give us a sense of, was the government, I mean, the actual like U.S. federal government, the Biden administration, were they encouraging, helpful, in the way? How did you play in the sandbox, so to speak, with them?
Well, they were helpful in so much as they, after the fact, helped us in Abu Dhabi. After we already got the Abu Dhabi guys to send these guys on a plane over, they came in afterwards. They were helpful in that the DOD allowed our task force to help navigate and coordinate the issuance of flight controls for the commercial charters they were in. So they helped. I think they were completely caught off guard, like most everybody else, at how rapid everything just devolved. And it was, you know, it was chaos. So, you know, trying to organize chaos is never easy. I don't think anybody was prepared in D.C. or Kabul, or even, you know, just by nature of the fact that the Afghanis were fleeing, you know, for their lives. We got pictures and videos of these people being 700-800 meters deep, you know, packed against the walls of the airport, everybody trying to get out. So it was, you know, it was chaos. I don't want to criticize the government because I still need them to help us. But, you know, the reality is it was chaotic. and it was very, very, very disorganized.
What were some of the, I mean, just give us a sense of, as you're together, I mean, you're saying you're working with former special operations, folks, former generals, private sector people. The biggest challenges you face in getting people out. Just give us some of a sense of, as you're gathered together at the at a hotel in D.C. as a command center, you're trying to conduct exfiltration operations on the other side of the world in Kabul, Afghanistan. The whole country's fallen into the hands of the Taliban. As you say, and we all saw, there's tremendous chaos at Kabul airport. Just what are some of the things you had to troubleshoot on the fly?
Well, I mean, one of it was people not getting through the gates, literally American citizens with blue passports not getting through the gates, people with permanent residency cards, you know, people on Taliban kill lists who, you know, were trying to escape, not being able to have access. And, you know, the Taliban were, negotiating with the State Department. There's, you know, they're not letting people through, letting people through. Everything was shifting. It was literally chaos. One hour everybody's going through one gate and then that stops. And then the next hour, you know, you're told to go through this gate. So, you know, we're trying to assist people in navigating that chaos. At the same time, we're trying to, you know, facilitate getting flights in and get them cleared. And then, you know, a lot of these flights were funded by donors, like people that probably watch your show that sent in money. I know Glenn Beck's group, Mercury One, funded the first flight in. And so, you know, they funded these flights for particular individuals, but these individuals can't get at the airport. So, you know, they're also taking in anybody and everybody. So, I mean, it was.
So, I saw in the article, Zach, I saw in the article that you actually put some of this on your own credit card because you said it was the right thing to do. Which is a very gallant move. I know a lot of people pitched in money. Glenn told me, I think he raised over $20 million in just a couple of days. We had Glenn Beck on the show earlier in the week. Glenn's an old friend of mine, old mentor of mine. Did you get all the orphans out, and where are the evacuees now?
So, unfortunately, we left a lot of people behind, Buck, a lot. And a lot of heroes that helped our servicemen over there are still there. We got some of the orphans out. There's some in Abu Dhabi now. The majority of the people that we helped by putting on charter flights, we pushed them to Abu Dhabi. So there's approximately 3,900 left with orphans, mostly families. I think the numbers I got from one of the organizations was about 80% are women and children that were taken out. We left a lot of people behind.
So what's the, and we're speaking to Zach Van Meter, member of the commercial task force that was working and did work to get thousands evacuated out of Afghanistan. And Zach, what happens now? I mean, you said we left people behind. The Taliban is in charge. They are now the government of Afghanistan. We all know that. What are we doing? And does the work of the commercial task force continue on? I know there might be operational sensitivities, and of course I respect that, but to whatever degree you can tell us there are efforts going on, what are they?
Yeah, so we are focused on resettlement, relocation, and humanitarian activities. A lot of the members are now, first off, this was not an organized thing. It was just ad hoc, anybody and everybody come help. So a lot of those guys that can still help are working on, you know, things like helping relocate and resettle Afghan nationals. We even got a request from the still government abroad of Afghanistan to help them with, you know, getting passports printed and other things because they have no foreign ministry now. And then there's a lot of people that still want to help those people inside, and they're talking to them and communicating with them daily. But we need guidance from the State Department. We need a procedure in place to put them on commercial flights. And at this moment, our single biggest issue is navigating the bureaucracy that our government's put in place that makes it very difficult for people who are willing or ready, willing, and able to help put people on flights to, you know, bring them here or bring them anywhere outside of Afghanistan to do so. So there's a whole lot of blocks in place that hopefully, with the help of, you know, groups like yourself and other viewers that can call into their congressional offices, knock those down.
Is that, I just want to ask you, because this audience you're speaking to is in all 50 states. You got a lot of former military listening, a lot of family members of military, and just people who want to get in the fight to help and do the right thing. You're saying call your congressman. Is there anything else that the commercial task force needs? Any other way that people should reach out?
So there's a lot of NGOs set up for this particular case. I would say if you want to donate time or energy, you can find these NGOs. There's hundreds of them. Call your congressmen, call your senators, write them letters, tell them that, you know, we need to get these people out. These people fought alongside us. I know you were former in service at some point too, and you understand the sensitivity of what these guys went through. They, you know, secretly sometimes at night helped people. They helped us hunt down Osama bin Laden. They helped us hunt down the terrorists, and we promised them that we would build them a nation, and now we've left them, you know, at the mercy of those who, you know, previously occupied them. So we have a responsibility to them. And at the same time, we have people who want to pull them out who do not have the capability because we're diplomatically stalemated. So, you know, unblocking that is a priority, as well as trying to figure out how to bring them back here or put them into a nation that they can thrive and grow in.
Right. I mean, that's, it's interesting you brought up this, and people have been saying there are plenty of friendly nations in the region where resettlement is also a very, you know, they'd be safe and it's a sound option. Muslim majority countries for a lot of the Afghan refugees who are getting out would certainly make sense as well. So, Zach Van Meter of the Commercial Task Force, appreciate so much, sir, you giving us some insight and perspective onto this one, and thanks for what you've done.
Thank you, Buck. I appreciate you putting the message out and telling our story. You know, it's one last thing. There are people still trying to leave the country, walking through Tajik or Uzbek or Pakistan, and they can't get out. There are people there that are trapped. You know, we need to do something about it. So any help you can get, any advocation you can do, we appreciate it. They deserve
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Zach, thank you so much. Thank you again. And please thank all the service members who help you out, too. Tell them we were thinking about them and asking for them here. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Bye.
All right, we're going to come back in a second here, talk about the California recall situation. Larry Elder. Larry Elder is a great guy. He's a great guy. You know, there's some people, I'll just tell you, there's some people in conservative media that I know that I'm like, and cause I like to build up the team. I like to have, I view it cause we're all under assault from the left, and the other side, you know, so this is why I don't say bad things about fellow conservative radio hosts or whatever. I view us all as on the same team. But Larry Elder, even above and beyond that, just a great dude. And I would love for him to win his race in California. It should be so sweet if he beat Gavin Newsom. So I don't want to get too excited about it because it's, you know, it's a tough ask. But and we're going to have Larry on the show at some point to talk to us about it. We'll talk about the recall situation against Newsom and then some Fauciite updates and take some of your calls, too. 800-282-2882. Anyone suffering from chronic everyday back pain wants to be like Arlene, a radio listener in California. She had bad back pain in her back, of course, her shoulders and legs for months. It was really rough. Then she heard about the results that plenty of listeners like you are having with Relief Factor. She tried Relief Factor herself, and now she no longer has a hard time getting up in the morning. Those aches and pains, completely gone. Arlene's like my dad, who is just, he's a beast on the golf course, man. He's out there 18 holes Saturday, 18 holes Sunday. Sometimes he wants to do 36 in one day. I mean, he's a madman on the golf course. And Relief Factor is really helping him out. He takes it. I just talked to my mom about it yesterday. I said, Mom, Dad's taking it every day, right? She says, taking it every day and really thinks that it's helping. So Relief Factor is something you should try, too, if you've got any aches and pains. It's a 100% drug-free product, which addresses joint pain, knee, hip, back, neck, and shoulder pain. It was created by doctors and based on scientific research, and it goes to the source of inflammation. Hundreds of thousands of people have ordered Relief Factor, and about 70% of them go on to order more. Join the more than 500,000 people and order the 3-week quick start for only $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF to get the $19.95 3-week quick start developed for you. Go to relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF, Relief Factor. Feel the difference.
As to this business about paying criminals not to shoot each other, why didn't we think of that before? Why don't we pay shoplifters not to shoplift? I mean, this is just madness. This is California, and this is the kind of stuff that Gavin Newsom has been doing. And you're quite right about him shutting down the state and in denying kids in-school education while his own kids were enjoying in-person private education. And as I mentioned to you before, the last time I think I was on, Sean, Nearly 80% of the kids educated in government schools are black and brown. These are the ones that the left prides itself on caring about. And 50% of third graders before the pandemic could not read at state levels of proficiency. And the math scores are even worse, even though we're spending about 15 grand per student per year. I'm going to be championing choice in education, which is why the left and Gavin Newsom have absolutely gone ballistic.
Larry Elder on a roll. Welcome back to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. This is Buck. That was Larry. And this is a really big moment, I think, for the future of, well, political parties in this country, for the Democrat Party for sure, insofar as it would be a bit of a seismic shock, pardon the expression, in the state of California if there was a Larry Elder victory over Gavin Newsom. I mean, it would be a big one, because remember, just like Andrew Cuomo, Gavin Newsom was doing the whole COVID victory dance.
Yeah, we in California, we wear those masks. We listen to science. We're slick. We're working on our tan in Malibu, going to French Laundry.
You know Gavin Newsom, you know his whole spiel. And he's a guy who just represents so much of what is wrong about the Democrat Party. He's a huge phony. He's just a big phony. He mouths all the preferred progressive slogans, but he lives a life of an elite, cloistered, rich person who does not have to suffer the consequences of the absurd socialist policies that are truly ruining California. I mean, Florida is a place where people want to go and move. Texas, they want to go and move. Tennessee. You can see there's a very clear trend here. California should be like the American version of paradise. I feel like when I grew up watching, because I was really big into movies growing up, all these movies that were, because Hollywood was really a thing that mattered at the time, there were all these movies that were filmed in California, and it just looked like paradise. Everybody was surfing and looked happy and healthy, and it was great, right? All the beautiful people, California. And now you got special apps in San Francisco to help you find and avoid the human stuff on the streets that happens. Los Angeles, they're not thinking about paying people to not shoot people. That was what Larry Elder was referring to. You know, avoid shooting somebody. Avoid violent crime. We'll give you a couple of $100 a month. Okay, I guess that's a way to go. Don't prosecute people for shoplifting. You know, there are progressives now who are going after district attorneys. They're mounting, and it's, of course, going to be a Soros-backed initiative, just like getting progressive prosecutors into offices like Chesa Boudin in San Francisco, like, what's that guy, Krasner in Philadelphia. They want prosecutors. The left wants prosecutors who don't prosecute criminals, basically, who try to find ways to avoid the actual enforcement of the law. And they wonder why we say they're a bunch of commies who want to kick at the load-bearing walls of our civilization and tear everything down. Come back into some of the latest on the climate change hysteria and other scientific quandaries for the left. We'll get to it in a moment. But this year marks the 20th anniversary, as you know, of 9/11. 20 years since nearly 3,000 innocent civilians were killed by terrorists right here in the USA. I still remember that day like it was yesterday. I'm sure you do, too. Inspired by that day, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been honoring America's heroes ever since. They're bringing hope to families across the country by giving 200 mortgage-free homes to heroes and their families. Gold Star and Fallen First Responder families with young children are getting mortgages paid off so they can stay in their homes where their memories are. Our nation's severely injured first responders and veterans are getting smart homes equipped with features to help them live their lives independently. This is so important. Help now. Honor America's heroes. Donate $11 a month at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2, T.org. Welcome back to the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. This is Buck rolling solo today here in the chair on the EIB. Clay out on vacation. Go to BuckSexton.com for news updates. Also, you can subscribe to the Buck Sexton podcast, which goes out early in the morning. It's quick, about 30 minutes long. Please do subscribe and share. Also, give it a 5-star rating. And you have the Clay and Buck podcast of this show every day, which is out, well, at the end of the show, 3 o'clock Eastern time. And I actually have a fun T-shirt up at BuckSexton.store. Don't mask me, bro.
So there you go. You can get a Don't Mask Me Bro t-shirt. And I think there's also an I Don't Kneel t-shirt there available as well. Because, yeah, I don't kneel and I don't want people to mask me. So those are important things to keep in mind. Speaking of masks and science and all the rest of it, I was very agitated yesterday because you might know this about me. I'm a true believer. I come here to do this show every day as a true believer, as a conservative since I was 13 or 14 years old, as somebody who was reading National Review and reading Milton Friedman and Buckley when I was a junior and senior in high school. I went off to college. I studied under conservative professor of political science, Hadley Arkes from Amherst College. He was my thesis advisor. I mean, this is who I am. It's who I've always been. So you do have a true believer here every day. And so, yes, I do get, I get fired up because I think these things really matter and I care. And I think we are in a fight for the soul of this country, for the future of this country. I think the forces of the organized activist left are tearing apart some of the foundational elements of America in ways that really do distress me. And I think there's so much lying in the media. And one of the things that I seek to do here every day is to be an antidote to those lies. I seek to be somebody who will take them on and hold them to account. And that's why when I heard all this stuff about the horse deworming medicine known as ivermectin, I took ivermectin when I had COVID because an MD that I trust very much said it won't hurt you and it may help you, so it's worth a shot. That was it. No one was promising me a miracle cure or anything else, but it was either take the ivermectin or just sort of, you know, take Tylenol and hope the pain goes down and suffer in silence and hope the COVID, you know, goes away, which of course it did, and I was fortunate in that regard. But I hear stuff like this. I mean, this was actually the former Obama chairman of economic advisors guy, Goolsbee, who I'm sure he's a nice enough guy. I've heard he's a nice guy, so I don't know him. I've never met him. I like to tell you when I know people and don't know them just because I have a rule that I don't trash my friends on air, even when I disagree with them, you know. And even if I think they're wrong on something, I won't agree with them because they're my friend, but I will not trash my I believe in, you know, personal loyalty to friends and family. But being honest about it, being upfront about it all the time. Anyway, Goolsbee really annoyed me with this one. I got to say, here he is trying to help spin the disastrous jobs report. I keep wanting to say the bad Obama jobs report. And I keep wanting to say the Obama job, but that's just because we got so used to talking about the bad Obama jobs report for 8 years with a Democrat in charge and the lowering of expectations about the economy and the furious spin cycle of the media trying to tell you that what you know, you don't really know. And we're seeing the same thing with Biden. Gosh, it's almost like the philosophy of big government hyper-regulation and social justice above the Constitution doesn't work out well for us. You almost get that feeling based on the results that we are seeing day in and day out. But here's Goolsbee, play 23.
But the thing to remember is that last month we had more than 1 million jobs got added. And over the course of this year, we were booming. And the thing that has changed in the last month is the virus has got out of control. We need to stop taking horse dewormers. We need to stop telling people that they can't have mask mandates. We need to get people vaccinated, and we need to get the spread of the virus down.
Okay.
The economy wants to come back.
Well, the economy is being held back by Biden's stupid policies. And you can know this at some level just because anybody who refers to ivermectin as horse dewormer medicine is a propagandistic fool and a buffoon. It's an inexcusably dishonest thing to say. All right. It's a medicine that, as I've said to you, the discoverer of ivermectin, I believe he was a Japanese individual, got the Nobel Prize for medicine as a result of this, because particularly for river blindness, it's an incredibly, for human beings, preventing it, incredibly effective treatment, as well as other parasitic infections. So this would be like someone saying, I don't know, if you've taken Larium or Mefloquine, for any of you who have been to like some pretty sketchy parts of the third world know what I'm talking about. That's a pretty heavy, it's the malaria medicine. I had to take it when I was in sub-Saharan Africa years ago. And you take it, it gives you crazy dreams, sometimes crazy good dreams. Hey-o, sometimes not good dreams at all. But you go on these medicines because they prevent malaria, right? So that's really important. That saves a lot of lives. Ivermectin also saves a lot of lives, and using it off label in the hopes that maybe it might have some effect against a virus like COVID is not some crazy idea. But that's what they've been, that's what the left, that's what the talking points are. And there are people now who might actually refuse or not want to take ivermectin because they will have heard from the really smart science people. The people believe in the science. Men can get pregnant. I believe in science. Democrats, in case you didn't know. That's how they sound. At least how they sound to me. They've said things like ivermectin is a horse dewormer, which is just absurd. You know, there are plenty of antibiotics and treatments that human beings take that you can also give to animals. I'm sure there are some right now, some veterinarians who are nodding their heads going, yep, we use a lot of the same stuff, you know, same stuff you use for people, you can use for animals. Anyway, speaking of science, if you want a really good take on the Green New Deal and the importance of it, you got to go with AOC. You got to remember, these are the people that want you to believe it. They are so well informed on the science, and you are not, because you don't believe them. You don't agree with them. Or maybe there are a couple of libs listening to this and, you know, I'm trying to convince them not to agree. But, you know, 99.9% of you know this is crazy. And here is just a moment of this with AOC saying, you know what? I don't want to get ahead of it. I'll let you hear it from her. Play 17.
The fossil fuel industry and the future of humanity are fundamentally incompatible. They just are. I mean, that's not a political opinion. That is the science. We continue to burn fossil fuels. Our planet will become inhabitable. Especially what's happening with Hurricane Ida is that, I mean, this is climate change. I don't know what more people need to see. And I'm very sad to say they're going to see a lot more in our lifetime to understand that this is human caused. We are at the brink. The UN IPCC report was released this year saying we are at code red for humanity.
Yeah, we're like totally at the brink. It's like, I remember freshman biology when I was in high school and I got like a B plus, because I'm like super good at the science, that we should like the world will end unless you pass my Green New Deal.
That's pretty much what you're being told. This is the Democrat. Remember, if there's anyone in the Democrat Party who can move the national conversation in the news media, it is Miss AOC, which tells you a lot about the intellectual worth and merit of the Democrat Party platform these days. But it wasn't that remarkable. The future of humanity, she says, fundamentally incompatible with fossil fuels. Fossil fuels give us so much. Fossil fuels are truly the lifeblood of a modern economy. And why does this matter so much right now? Because they're going to try to supercharge the Green New Deal madness with the $3.5 trillion of spending the Democrats are trying to ram through without anyone really understanding what is in it. The stakes, my friends, are very, very high on this. So we'll come back with more in a second. If you've got some closing thoughts, want to tell me what you thought of the show today, what you want to hear about next week, 800-282-2882, 800-282-2882. And in the meantime, have you seen the out of control housing cost increases this year? Three big cities are seeing housing costs grow by more than 25% in the last year alone. Phoenix, Seattle, and San Diego. A total of nine cities saw housing costs go up more than 20% in the last 12 months' time. How long will the housing bubble last? And what's your way of protecting all that you've worked hard to earn and save? For me and a whole lot of folks, it's gold. My partners at the Oxford Gold Group have precious metals that can be delivered to your home. There's nothing like real gold on your doorstep. Imagine opening your safe. You got your passport there, jewelry, important papers, deed to your house maybe, and real gold from the Oxford Gold Group. If you think buying real gold is complicated, it's not. Trust me. My friends at the Oxford Gold Group are who you need to call. They'll explain everything to you. Having real gold delivered to your home or having real gold as part of your IRA, it's just a phone call away with the Oxford Gold Group. I've done this. I've called them, gotten the gold delivered to my home, and I'm trying to add and build out my precious metals holdings because I think things are going to get rough. Call them now, 833-404-GOLD, and learn how you can have real gold in your IRA and delivered to your door. Call Oxford at 833-404-GOLD, 833-404-G-O-L-D. Gonna be closing up shop here in a minute. This is Buck Sexton on the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. Getting you through all the latest news today without my main man Clay, who is out on vacation. Of course, we miss him. He'll be back with us next time we are on air. He's probably having a great time at a football game or something somewhere, but we will be having Clay, obviously, next time we take to the EIB. Appreciate you hanging out with me today here as I get to sit in the EIB chair and address you about all the things going on here. You know, Labor Day, I'm sure some of you have some fun Labor Day plans. For me, fun plans involve not a whole lot of plans. You know, just trying to relax, read. I'm in the middle of right now. I'm sure a lot of you have read With the Old Breed about the Marines in World War II in the Pacific Theater. It's a memoir. It's such a great book. Almost done with it because I believe it's the basis for the Band of Brothers series on HBO or somehow tied into that. But irrespective of that, it's just a great, With the Old Breed's a great book. I'm really enjoying that. That's my beach read. That's my version of, you know, long weekend time. I like to read history books. As some of you know, I've even done whole history podcasts on the Battle of Lepanto in 1571, the Siege of Malta, 1565. I actually owe a Siege of Malta Part 2 podcast in the Buck Sexton podcast feed. So if you haven't heard, you can look up Buck Sexton Siege of Malta. And the first part of it, which kind of gives you the preamble to the actual siege, and I'm still trying to finish up the second part. But I like to do history things, which is my way of telling you why I'm diving in here for a second into the history of Labor Day. It was signed as a federal holiday, or Congress rather passed an act making Labor Day a legal holiday on June 28, 1894. President Grover Cleveland signed it into law. So there you go. It's been around for quite a while. A time when there was a lot of strife between those who were working, particularly for the railroads, but also just in industry in general. Railroads really were the first major industry and allowed for true industrialization in this country. I'm reading another book, Steel Empires, about the railroad industry in this country. I read multiple books at once. That's another great beach read. That one is about the basically building the Transcontinental Railroad. And it's fascinating. If you've ever seen the show, which I do really recommend, Hell on Wheels, I really enjoy that show a whole lot. I think you will too. Not for kids. It's got a lot of violence and, you know, stuff like that. But it's a great series on AMC. And the book that I'm reading goes along with it quite well. Steel Empires. So you got Steel Empires. These are the Buck beach reads of the weekend, Steel Empires, and then With the Old Breed. I bet a huge portion of you listening to this have already read With the Old Breed. You're going, yeah, Buck, you're a little late to the party, but glad you're enjoying it. But it's a really good, really good book. Really compelling, amazingly well written. I said I would get to some of your calls, and I will. Richard in Kentucky, you've been patiently holding. What's going on, Richard?
Good afternoon, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I just wanted to call in and comment real fast. I know I'm going into the lion's den with this, but I wanted to be a dissenting opinion on the border wall. I do not believe we should build a border wall. I believe we should have an open border policy. And the quick example I have is I grew up as a military child with two parents in the military. I served in the military myself. We lived in Germany from 1987 to 1990. I was there when the Berlin Wall came down. I have pieces of the Berlin Wall to this day. And I have to say that when a wall goes up, it doesn't just keep people out. It also keeps people in. And just because today everybody wants to be in America doesn't mean that's going to be the case tomorrow.
When that Berlin Wall went up.
Sorry, go ahead.
Can I ask you, Richard? First of all, thank you. And look, I'm always happy, you know, to have conversations with folks who disagree on a whole range of issues. So you understand. So it's not that you think the border wall, some people object because they think it won't work. And then I tell them, I've been down there. I've talked to Border Patrol. That actually is very effective for the purposes of preventing illegal immigration. So you just want, you want open borders is essentially the, that's your, you just would prefer to have completely open borders. And you're a veteran, which is also an interesting part of this puzzle. Unfortunately, we only have about a minute, so I don't think I can go too deep into the open borders conversation, or other than to say, how do you have a country if you don't have control of who's coming, who's going, and what their rights are, and what that would mean?
Right, and I understand that argument. Perhaps I could call on a later date and have the conversation further. My point would just be, Germany said the same, or Russia said the same thing to the East Germans at the end of World War II. General Patton wanted to attack the Soviets at the end of World War II. Soviets, understandably, did not want that to happen. So when they broke up Berlin, they told everybody, "Oh, we don't want them to come into our territory. They're going to be evil." They're gonna be
right, but as you understand, in East Germany, they were preventing people from leaving. that's what the wall wasn't to prevent everybody from going to East Germany. So it's a very different.
Saying the day after the wall went up, when people realized they wanted to leave and they couldn't leave, that's when the problem came in. So that's what I'm saying, trying to put in perspective for today. Like, yeah,
okay. Richard, I appreciate it. We don't have time to go too deep into the open borders philosophy right now, but it's interesting to hear from somebody who I guess is generally on the right and is a veteran who believes that's a good idea. I mean, I obviously disagree with Richard. I think it'd be disastrous for the country. I think it's effectively the dissolution of the country to not have borders. So if you have open borders, you don't, first of all, with the welfare state that we have and the developing world wanting to come here by the tens, if not hundreds of millions, and what kind of a culture, what kind of a polity, a political union can you have if anyone can just show up and be treated the same way as anybody else without any respect to the laws and customs? And okay, that's my 30-second version of, I think open borders would be crazy and would destroy the country. But I do, Richard has entitled his point of view, and I thank him for his service. Thank him for calling in. That's going to be it for today here for me on the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. Like I said, please check out the Buck Sexton podcast. It's out in the morning. Wherever you listen to podcasts, subscribe. It's only 30 minutes. Great way to kind of get you primed for this big show. Also, listen to the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts. ClayandBuck.com is the website. Have a great Labor Day weekend, everybody. Talk to you in just a few.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.